Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show. It's December 1st. Where did all the time go? Last I checked, it was like spring. December 1st, and I'm Rosita DeJesus, and I'm your host. Unfortunately, Sifu Robert Gill cannot join us today. However, I am joined by someone who agreed to fill in the co-host shoes for Sifu Bob, and that's our regular and loyal listener, Deborah Evans. Deborah, how are you? I almost called you sensei, but you're not sensei yet. It was force of habit. How you doing, Deb? Deb, your mic's up. Debbie, is that you? Debbie. We're working.
Rosita DeJesus, is this you?
Yes, it is. This is not Debbie. I think.
No, this is Sensei Bill Kortenbach calling in.
Oh, hi. How are you, Sensei Bill?
Very good.
Gosh,
I couldn't tell whether you
were
talking. I'm sorry.
Well, I couldn't tell whether I was talking to you or listening. Well, you know what's funny is that both you and Deb are calling from 253 numbers. There's Deb. How you doing, Deb?
I'm doing good.
Good. Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you both called in. I found out a little bit earlier that Sensei Bill wanted to join us to be a guest co-host on the show, and we also have Deborah Evans out of Port Orchard. And Sensei Bill, I forgot, you're located like out south, like Puyallup, Tacoma, Olympia or something? I forget.
Yeah. I'm in Tacoma.
No.
I live
in Olala.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you live. Oh, Olala. Okay. Sorry, I don't know where I got Port Orchard. I have no idea. But Sensei Bill
because
is
that's where
in,
I work out.
Oh, okay. And Sensei Bill, again, you're from.
I'm from Tacoma, and I run the Safety First program in Tacoma, downtown Tacoma, basically, is where it is.
Awesome. 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 Because I was hoping you'd call because since it's open mic night, I'd like for you to tell listeners. I know you briefly went into it a little while ago, a few weeks ago with us, but I'd like for you to tell the listeners a little bit more about Safety First a little bit later during open mic.
Sure.
To kind of fill up our time for talking about random and fun and serious things and stuff. So, for our listeners out there, come join the fun. It's open mic night on the Dynamic Dojo show. So our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And let's talk about everything under the sun. Well, no, I take that back. I don't want to talk about religion or politics because that,
yay!
I know, right? That tends to make everything, like, so weird. Oh, and, you know, looks like Sifu Bob is on the line briefly with us. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, doing well. What's going on?
Nothing much. We just got started. How is the Hollywood holiday parade going over there?
Oh, it sucks. These people, there's too many Chiefs, not enough Indians, way different than last year. The food's the worst in the world. Last year was fantastic. But you know me, I never speak my mind. You know, I want to tell you, I got a haircut yesterday. And you know how hair is actually singular, not plural? At my
yeah,
head and my balding bag, that's all I'm getting cut anymore is a hair. I'm starting to look like Rob Reiner, Carl Reiner, Ron Howard. It's like toothpaste. Did you notice the toothpaste is singular? Why is it called toothpaste? Anybody who uses it as toothpaste would be pronounced to get, oh, it's toothpaste. Okay, I'm done.
Hair's cut.
Hey, I see the Disney blimp going over, too. That's pretty cool. They got balloons going. They got Superman going. It's actually a really cool sight tonight. And the weather,
awesome.
It's about 70 right now.
Oh, God, really? It's supposed to snow tomorrow.
Yeah.
All of us from the Puget Sound are like, really, we hate you.
Yeah, but in this case, we love snow.
Yeah,
because
in
the
this
Seahawks
case, we love
are playing, and St. Louis isn't used to it. So
we've got that advantage. That'd be great. Now, did you drive are you driving a parade car?
Well, we're still trying to work it out. If I do, I'm driving a. I am driving in the parade. I'll be driving the cast of the Disney show Dog with a Blog.
Oh, cool. Right
on. I saw my first episode last night, and it's about a talking dog. Now, if that dog talks to me, I'm out of there. I'm going to lose a car right in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard.
You know, I've always been curious, so I'm just going to cut in with this. I've been curious, you know. Number one, how does someone, you know, get to drive a cool car and, you know, dress up in a suit and drive, you know, 5 miles down a street? I mean, how do you get, you know, to do that? You just go in and say, hey.
Well, now, the guy who has the car is the coordinator for the parade's car show, the drivers for the cars. Now, he goes to different car shows, and as long as they're nice looking and a convertible, he says, hey, how would you like to do the Hollywood Christmas parade? Show up at 3 o'clock on December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And we're good. I mean, they have, oh, my God, they didn't trust him. And this is why there's too many Chiefs, not enough Indians. They went to a rental house and
uh-huh.
said, listen, we want more cars. They gave us Lamborghinis, Ferraris, Bentleys. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now they have the married car here. He's driving in the city of L.A. has its own parade car with speakers, microphone, the whole bit. And that's what the mayor's going to be driving in. Now, this year's Grand Marshal is driving in a Rolls-Royce parade car, and it's none other than Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Now, when does the parade start?
It hasn't yet. Well, I think it's officially started, sort of, but we're not going to be stepping off with the celeb until about 6:30.
Oh, okay.
And it has people like me and people. Now, the people performing are really cool. They have parking spots downstairs. It's Leanne Rimes, Billy Ray Cyrus. There's a bunch of people performing. William Shatner is going to be here. You know, the guy that tried to get on our show because of his martial arts build, he couldn't get past the gatekeeper.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet. Oh, yeah. Man. You know, one of these days it would be great to get William Shatner on to talk about something other than Star Trek. I'm pretty sure he'd welcome it. I'm pretty sure he'd like appreciate it, you know. But then it's a matter of getting through his manager.
You can't do it. It's like you won't even hear about it.
Yeah,
it's the worst.
Yeah.
We've got some great cars here. A couple I'm posting on Facebook. Maybe you can't hear, but we've got some bands going in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Now this parade's about 3.5 miles long. It goes down Hollywood Boulevard to Vine Street. You know the famous corner, Hollywood and Vine.
It turns
right to Sunset and then comes back. It's about 3.5 miles.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
What are we talking about? What did I interrupt you from doing? You know, man, that's my job.
We just started. I just gave out our phone number. In fact, I'm going to give it again. Listeners, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. It's open mic night. We get to talk about anything and everything except for religion and politics. And I was going to explain why we don't talk about religion and politics. It's just because it can get too volatile. And, you know, we try to stay away from proselytizing and stuff like that. You're more than welcome to talk about your beliefs, but you know, don't proselytize. We want to keep everything, you know, great and enjoyable for everybody. So, you know, let's not start any wars on the air. And I was going to get just a little bit of background about Sensei Bill, just a little bit of what Artie does, how long he's been doing it from Sensei Bill and Deb. So,
now, who's on the line with us?
Yeah, we've got Deb on the line with us. She's one of our co-hosts today, and we've got Sensei Bill Kortenbach from Tacoma, Washington, with us today. So,
cool.
Hey. Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
So,
hey, Deb.
How you doing?
I'm good, Sensei Bill. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself down there.
I am. I didn't get a chance to call in last year because I drove some talent that was performing at 6 o'clock, and then later I drove Susan Sullivan. I didn't get the chance to call. This year, I'm making see the sacrifices I make for you, Rusty.
Yeah. Now, are you following the parade right now, waiting to get thrown into a car, or are you just waiting by the car?
No, I'm sort of just waiting out in the open. I know where the car is in case they want me to drive. And then we drive down to the green room.
Mm-hmm.
And then we pick up the celebrities. Now, we're all on the roof this year. Last year, we were all over the structure. Now, what happened was they had some not intelligent person. I can't say moron like I'd like to. Well, he had all the cars lined up. Now, we're in a very tight, enclosed parking structure.
Uh-huh.
And the next day, because of the way he did it, everybody's complaining about headaches. So a lot of people last year got carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh, that sucks.
Oh, yeah.
Really
people
sucks.
Are complaining about headaches and all sorts of stuff. But it was cool last year. You know, I had a lot of great people. Kimberly Locke I drove, Susan Sullivan I drove, saw Eric Estrada here. He's already here. Leanne Rimes is already here. Stevie Wonder is supposed to perform tonight. I'm sure he's already here. And the parade is moving now.
Oh, very cool. Wow, sounds like a lot of big names this year, as all years, for the Hollywood Christmas Parade. And,
Rusty, they're not big now. It's like they're having a car with Tony Dow and Jerry Mathers. You and I may know those names. My kids are going, who's that?
Well, I mean, Stevie Wonder. I mean, come on. He was classic, and he's still classic. You said Leanne Rimes is there, right?
Yeah.
William Shatner. I mean, you know, those are great celebrities to have on for the Hollywood Christmas
Parade.
They are.
You know, Montel Williams, Buzz Aldrin, they're amazing people. Now, I was very fortunate last year, as we are with this show, of having some great people in that car.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some wonderful guests on this show. And we had the pleasure of talking to Sifu Alzagoskos yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like us.
Yeah.
It was funny to hear him talk. And it was funny to hear some of the words that were coming out of his mouth.
He was, when he's not speaking in public, it's like, wow, you know. But but I do want to talk about that a little bit later.
Do
you have to go?
No, I'm going to listen to the show. I'm going to put you on mute, though.
Okay, cool. All right, so Bob's on. Okay, just cut in when you're ready. Okay, so Bob's on mute. I guess he's going to go do something like find a car or something. So later on, I'd like to talk a little bit about new shows coming on to the Seika Network, as well as our recently added shows. But we'll get into that. I want to get into Sensei Bill, if you can tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, how long you've been doing martial arts, what styles you teach, and all that great stuff.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate being on, and Sifu, it's an honor. So really what happened was I started taking Ishinryu Karate from Steve Armstrong in Tacoma in August of 1975, and I've been doing that art continuously ever since then. I'm seventh dan in it now, and I run a school in Tacoma called Safety First Personal Protection Strategies. And it's an outgrowth of some of the different things that I've done. The base system is Ishinryu Karate. And what we do is we cross-train, but we do not mix the systems. We found systems that dovetail very neatly, but we don't want to lose the unique flavor of each one, so we don't blend them like so many places do. We teach them as separate but interlocking and complementary systems. And what we do is Ishinru Karate is the base system, and we do Eskrima Serrata, Takosa Eskrima Serrata, which is a short stick, a very close quarter version of Eskrima. And along with that, what the signature program of our school, though, is what we call the adrenal response or survival response conditioning program, which we put on four times a year. That program, we take people off the street who have no experience whatsoever, but they want to rapidly gain a skill set that will enable them to defend themselves on the street. And we can teach them how to do that in one day. And they never need to repeat the training. Because the methodology that we use is very different. Because, you know, the thing is, most of what we learn, whether it is mathematics or English or even martial arts or gymnastics, sports, whatever, is used primarily with conscious brain learning, where the brain is confronted with a new task, and it automatically divides that task into a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then it processes its way through and does that repetitively until there is a comfort level with performing this new task, and you don't have to think about it anymore. We call that muscle memory, but what has actually happened is the brain has developed a new neural network for that particular task. And the problem with this is that it's very, very slow. It takes many, many hundreds of hours often, especially with a complex skill set like a martial art, to get to the point where you really actually have muscle memory under pressure. And, you know, the best way to explain the difference between what we call conscious brain learning and the experiential format of learning is to ask yourself this question. Little animals out in the wild rarely, if ever, get a do-over. If they don't get it right the first time, they're lunch for something else. So how is it that these animals learn the skills that they need to learn so quickly? And the answer to that question is nature's method of teaching lessons and imprinting them almost instantaneously is high levels of stress and fear. And so, you know, because nature designed fear to be an asset, not a liability. So what we did was we took that same paradigm and we, you know, imposed it over the watermark of self-defense training. And we developed a program whereby we can train people so that they're when the brain shuts down because of high levels of fear, the body simply takes over because it has a behavioral template that has been conditioned into it using mass practice and high stress in that program. And it's very successful. We've been doing it for about 13 years now, and a number of our students, you know, in the ensuing time after they took the course have been in adverse circumstances, and they've come out of those circumstances very, very well. Either they've been able to see what was happening beforehand and avoid it, or they've been able to survive with great ease, or they overcame the aggressor very quickly. So I'm very happy about this because, and the last thing I'll say about this is that what we do in this particular arena is not meant to compete with martial arts training or to replace it in any way. Learning a martial art and learning it well is the work of a lifetime. And there are many people who do not have the time or the inclination or the money to invest in that learning curve that's going to take them, you know, many months and years. But they still want to be able to feel safe on the street, and that's what this was designed for. This was designed for those kinds of people with those particular issues and those desires, because they deserve to be able to feel safe and to have a good skill set also. And that's what we do.
Awesome. That is awesome. Oh, my goodness. Now, I know I'm going to ask about this at the end of the show before we log out, because we normally ask for contact information at the end of the show, but in case there are people out there listening that want to look up information about either your dojo or Safety First, where can people go if they're on their computers right
okay.
now?
If you go online punch in Safety First PPS, that's PaulSimon.org. Safety First, one long word, PPS.org, and we'll
okay.
come right up. If you are a computer challenged and want to use a number, you can call Virginia Smethers at area code 253-495-2985, mm-hmm. and she can help you out. She can give you extra information, more than what you've heard here, and answer all your questions. And if you're interested in signing up for one of these classes, she can do that. The other thing is that these classes are very inexpensive. They are one-day classes. They're 8 to 10 hours long, and you can get them for less than $100.
Very cool. I mean, that's rare to find classes at that.
Well,
we're
an official 501c3, and we are staffed entirely by volunteers. Nobody gets paid. Everybody who works in that program is a grad of that program who wants to give back and pay it forward. And mm-hmm. so that's how we roll on that one. And we charge a low fee because and by the way, if we have a case where, for instance, a battered woman is in fear for her life and she simply doesn't have the funds, we will not turn her away. We have mm-hmm. ways of bringing them in. We don't turn anybody away who is in a life-threatening situation and needs this training.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So, yeah, there's always a way to make it happen for them. So, anyway, that's our passion. That's what we do down here in Tacoma. And as I said, it's an honor to be on. I followed you on Facebook, Sifu, for a long, long time, and
mm-hmm.
Many of my friends know you, but I've never had the chance to meet you. My partner, Virginia Smethers, met you here at the event that you just put on for the relief in the Philippines.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was an interesting weekend. It was like Philippines typhoon relief all that weekend. We had that
yes,
banquet, and then we had the fundraiser at MKG Martial Arts. It was an incredible weekend. It was very fun, very fun.
Also, Roberto Pagan is we let him use our space. We don't charge him because we love this guy. He is a phenomenal martial artist. He's a
yes.
beautiful, humble spirit. And whenever I run across somebody like that who's just getting started, I want to give them a leg up. And
yes.
So we gave him the use of our facility with no facility use fee whatsoever so that he can get his business going. And we love having him there. And I was really happy to see him up there working on this fundraiser that you had. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm. I love him to death. He came up to my studio and just offered to teach a class. And, you know, part of me asked, you know, well, you know, what can I give you? You know, that kind of thing. And he just wanted to just get out and meet people and, you know, build his community, his circle and stuff like
right.
that. And I thought, wow, you know, and he drove all this way, you know, out to West Seattle, well, Tacoma, West Seattle, it's not that far, but still, you know, it's a haul, you know, to get out here.
The guy he is, you know, and
that's how he is,
you know,
and I love him to death. And he gave,
yeah.
and he gave a great class. Unfortunately, I came into the middle of it and wasn't able to actually, you know, interrupt and go in. But then after that, he volunteered his time off to the side and taught other people, and it was just like the coolest
well,
thing.
He's a man that's in love with his art. You know,
yes.
he's in love
yes.
with his art. He's passionate about his art. He wants to help people. And, you know, the martial arts are for every person that you meet in the martial arts who's a charlatan and really is trying to take advantage of people. There are 100 others out there who love their yeah. art so much that money is a distant third to them. And they want to help people and they want to pay their other people have helped contribute to who they are and what they've become. They know this, And they mm-hmm. know that at core, martial arts is about human relationships, and they want to pay it back. And
yes.
Roberto Bacon, I recognized this in him the very moment I met him, and I said, you know what, mm-hmm. I'm going to help this man. And so I opened up my dojo to him, and he teaches there Wednesday nights, and he's got a good, strong little group going there, and eventually he'll move on, when he gets big enough and solvent enough that he can do it. But this is my way of paying it back, to get to help these guys with good skill sets and a humble spirit and this desire to help other people and, you know, give them a leg up and help them get going. Because,
yes.
you know, I had help too. You know, we all have.
Yes. Definitely, definitely. And I just want to put another shout out there about Roberto. If there are any listeners out there in the Tacoma area and you're looking for Piquiti Tirsha, look up Roberto Pagan and teaching over there at Sensei Bill Kortenbach School and go check him out. He's a wonderful guy. I guarantee you'll love him the second you meet him. And he doesn't hold anything back. You know, unlike some schools where they'll say, well, you know, you can't even watch a class. You know, he'll start pulling out the bolos and the compilans, you know, while he's just explaining what he does. He's that passionate about Piquiti Tirsha. So, go check him out. Cool.
Yeah, and, you know, for those listeners out there who wonder what Piquiti Tirsha is, Piquiti Tirsha is the long-range attacking art that they teach the Philippine Marines in the Philippines. It's a very, very aggressive, very aerobic art. If you want a really good aerobic workout where your heart's going to be pounding and the sweat's going to be dripping off you and you're learning a good skill, this is the art to learn. I'm thrilled to be able to give a plug for him along with you, Sifu, because this young man is the future of the martial arts
mm-hmm.
here in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is. And it's like, you know, the – like I said, you know, he's just one of those gentlemen that is so passionate about his art. And he'll give you 100% if you study with him, whether it's in class or privately. When he, like you said, Sensei, he came to my class and got my group just sweating, just on the basics. And, you know, my group was like all about the basics. They're like, oh my gosh, this is like cool and stuff like that, you know. And Piquiti Tirsha also is, you know, it's an old style. I mean, 1890 something, I think is when it was formally founded. And he brings Grand Tujon Leo Gahe Jr. here regularly.
Hey, Rusty, what do you make you think? Weren't you there?
What's that?
What are you talking about? Think it was 1890. Weren't you there? Weren't you around when Piquiti Tirsha invented?
Oh, okay, I'll give you one.
Wait a minute. She's the same age as I am, so.
Robert, you're getting yourself into very hot water here.
You big dummy.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah, go check out Roberto Pagan. Let's go over to Deb. Deb, tell us a little bit about your background.
I did some judo when I was in grade school. I was probably about 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Learned a bit of Japanese too, and then in 1986, around there, I graduated high school and took a self-defense course at Olympic College under Sensei Doug Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And had such fun at that I found out what style he was and looked up the dojo here in Pearl Orchard and started then under Sensei Bill Olson.
Mm-hmm.
And got my brown belt under him, and then I had kids and moved to Texas and came back about 3 years ago and went back to the dojo, and I'm now under Sensei Les Bishop.
Mm.
And I'm just having a grand time with it.
That's awesome. Now, you started
What system
in...
are you studying? I'm sorry to interrupt. I was curious what system you are studying.
Oh, Tokukan Karate.
Ah, ha, ha, very good.
Yeah, Bukkokukan. And you actually started learning at Olympic College, which was, in a sense, like the place where Bukkokukan itself was founded.
No.
It was pretty cool. Sounds like Bob is driving. So tell us, for our listeners that aren't familiar with Bukkokukan, now I'm a Bukkokukan practitioner also. That was my first art that I got my black belt in and taught it until about 1991 when I started teaching Kajikembo. But there are some listeners out there that have not heard of Bukkokukan karate or have heard of the Bukkokai or the Bukkokukan as far as like the place, you know, the dojo. But don't know what it is.
The Bukkokai Military Arts College in Japan.
Yeah, but
and,
so can
and
you
that's
tell
actually where we get our name from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we can be traced all the way back to Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
Masanakaji, when he came here to Seattle and was going to Bremerton College, it was known as Shinpurin, wind and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the name was kind of notorious with a political group, and so he changed the name and the katas, he changed the name to Bukkokukan and just kind of made the katas a little more flowing. He had a run of exchange of ideas with Bruce Lee, and so our style kind of almost looks like Bruce Lee in that we're relaxed until the point of impact. And we do tend to cross-train and use what we can and kind of blend it in, but our katas always remain the same, and they're the same throughout our system.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to mute your mic. Or can you mute your mic? Sorry, Deb. Bob, is that you? Can you mute your mic for a little bit? Because I'm getting a lot of feedback from you. I think he did. Okay, sorry about that, Deb.
I did.
Oh, okay.
Not a problem. But none of our black belts fight the same. None of our white belts are para techniques or street techniques, whichever you want to call them. Our self-defense, they none of them look the same. The only thing that would look the same in our system is our katas, which is and they kind of look like the Shotokan katas.
Well, if I remember correctly, if I remember my history, even though I haven't taught it in about 20 years, a lot of the influence comes from Shitoryu. But rather than, you know, calling our katas like the Heian, like Heian Shodan, Heian Nidan, and stuff like that, we do tend to call them Pinyan, Pinyan 1, Pinyan Shodan, Pinyan Godan, you know, stuff like that. But they do. The katas do remain the same, which gives it that traditional flavor. Now, you know, when I first, you know, started teaching, a lot of people that I met were like Shotokan, you know, Ishinryu, Shitoryu, you know, that kind of thing, and really weren't all that familiar with the background of Bukkokukan karate or the founder, Yoichi Nakachi. And they were like, well, what is that? You know, and the best way that I could demonstrate what we were was to do the kata and then explain the history. And then it made sense to people. But other than that, it was like, you know, back even in the, you know, 70s when I started, it was still a very new art, considering that it was officially founded. Okay. Go ahead.
I've got to run. I'm about to step up on the parade route. It was good talking to you. I enjoyed it. I always enjoy doing the show with you. You're a great co-host. Love you. And I'll talk to you during the week.
All right. Well, have fun over there.
I will. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have fun.
In the 70-degree weather. I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
I know. Well, we're sitting here going, we're waiting for snow.
We don't say the S word. You know?
Okay. Okay, well, when it does snow, I'll say the other. When it does snow, I'll be saying the other S word.
You say it'll do it.
Yeah, okay, well, hopefully the Olympic Mountains will, like, keep it away a little bit. All right, so,
yeah.
So yeah, you do Potokakon, that's great, and you're still a brown belt now. Do you have any idea when you're going to be testing for your Shodan?
I have no clue. They haven't even told me when I'm testing for my next belt.
Oh,
last meeting I was at, it was like winterish. But
well,
I have a bunch of things I got to get signed off first before on my sign-off sheet before I can test. So, and catching a black belt long enough to get anything signed off at my level, because I am the top-ranking student in the class,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, trying to grab one of them black belts away from the white belts.
Oh, yeah. That's old school. That is old school, like Sensei Bill said. Now, you're Sankyu now, right? So your next rank would be Nikyu, second brown, or?
I'm cool. Sankyu now.
Okay,
and if anybody says, you're welcome.
You know, I got that, too.
So my next...
Sankyu, you're welcome. Okay.
My next rank is Nikyu, and then EQ, and then Shodan.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm going to go
so
ahead
I'm
and
So I'm close.
In. Very cool. And, like, you know, I hope you can get your sheet signed off. So if any of the senseis are listening, let's get Deb, like, signed off and get her going on Nikyu. Let's go ahead and take a caller. Let's open the phone lines here. We've got a caller from area code 423. Area code 423, welcome to Dynamic Dojo. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, Sifu. This is Antia.
Antia, oh my gosh. Hi, how are you? Oh, good to hear
from
you.
I have a brain, but it's you.
Aw, right on. Thanks for calling. Antia is an old student of mine.
Yes,
a kick-ass student, as a matter of fact. And Antia was just a
kick butt. Yes.
Yep, I bet you can. I bet you can. Thanks for calling in. Oh my goodness, we were just about to get ready to do some shout-outs and stuff like that. You want to hang on for a second, and like you can actually share whatever you want to share with us. If you got anybody you want to say hi to, or just want to sit and chat with us, feel free, because this is open mic night for anybody. So anyone
that
wants to call in.
I just wanted to say you and girl Cheryl are the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. You know, we had good time.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we beat the crap out of one another, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We did. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you get to, you know, teachers, when you get to a point where you don't want to punch at your students for self-defense drills, then you know that, you know, that they're on the ball. And, you know, a lot of people would think that, well, you know, if you're going to punch at a student and they hit you hard, they don't have any control. That's not the point, because, like, you know, me and Guru made sure that we were protected, and we really pushed you, Antia, to hit, because this is how it's going to be on the street. And then I remember that one day, I think luckily you got Guru with it. You just, like, meet an elbow, bam, 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 bam. And luckily she had the protective gear on, and that was when everything shot through the roof for you. Your skill level just went right through the roof, and we couldn't stop you from there. It was just like, go, 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 go. And
yeah,
that's,
you know,
just so wonderful.
I used to think that in order to be a pacifist, I had to shrivel up and die if I was ever in a self-defense situation. And you taught me, in order to be a pacifist, I had to live. And
mm-hmm.
I know how to walk away from something now. And, you know, I feel secure and safe walking by myself.
If I can interject a statement into here for a second,
sure.
This is Bill Kortenbach, for me, pacifism is a choice. And when you are in a survival situation, your choices have been taken away.
Yes,
that's
sir.
So it is survival that you are engaging in. It is not pacifism, nor is it aggression. It is simply survival. And if you want to live, and be a pacifist tomorrow than you would act to save your life today.
Yeah, but I had to learn that, you know. I did not know that. And I learned a lot more things, you know. I mean, how you know, that I don't have to be a weak woman. I can be a strong woman. And, you know, that there's all kinds of strengths. I mean, I have some body limitations, but I still can do what I need to do if I ever had to. And my self-confidence grew, and I discovered how huge my ego and everybody else's was.
That's part of the learning process, you know. I mean, you know, it is. It's thinking about the pacifist, the pacifist position. Years ago, me and Guru knew a Kajikembo student that I'll just refer to as Sister Rebecca. She was a nun and taking kung fu and self-defense, and you know. Even to her, it sounded weird, a nun learning martial arts. And, you know, she actually, you know, wrote about it because she was a writer and stuff like that. And, you know, she learned the same thing you did, that, you know, being a pacifist is exactly what Sensei Bill was talking about, that in order to be a pacifist and in order to live, you have to, one, learn to live and live and to know that, you know, when someone makes that choice to do you harm, then all bets are off, you know. So, yeah, I mean, and she did well. I mean, the first time she hit me in the face, and it was on accident, and she hit pretty hard. The first time she hit me in the face, she cried her eyes out. It was so sad. She absolutely cried her eyes out and couldn't continue for the rest of the class. She felt that badly. But, you know, as she realized that she wasn't going to be going against her belief, and when she realized also that she wasn't going to be any less of a nun to her order and any less of a pacifist, that was, you know, just like you, that was when the skill level just grew, and her skill level grew, her confidence grew, and, you know, she was kicking butt and taking names. It was
well,
very awesome.
You know, to put a finer point on this, Mahatma Gandhi, who was arguably the most famous pacifist who ever lived, made a very interesting statement. He said, given the choice between cowardice and violence, I choose violence. Mahatma Gandhi. And so there is a difference, a huge difference, between meekly allowing somebody to injure you and take your life, and the choice to be nonviolent. This is an active choice, not a passive choice. And you do it for a purpose, as he did. You know, he was trying to get liberty and freedom for his people. And to do that, he used pacifism as a strategy, which is different than when you are in a survival situation and it is not over the issue of freedom or the other principles that you are choosing to stand on. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but it does to me.
It does.
It makes perfect sense. But it was a learning experience for me. I did not understand that until I started with Sifu and Guru, and there was a lot of good times. I mean, there was always something new going on and something new to learn, and I kind of remember, too, when the switch kind of flipped in my head.
We remember that, too.
Yeah. Good times.
Good times.
Yeah, I wanted to wish you a wonderful holiday season and say hello to Mama, and I miss her lumpia.
Oh, awesome. I'll let Mom know. I'll let Mom know, and I'll tell Guru that you say hello. And it was so good talking to you. I see you on Facebook a lot, but it was so good to hear your voice.
Yeah, it was good to hear you, too. I'm really very grateful for technology so I can reach out to friends. But any the old gang, you know, they're having babies and they're growing up and
yeah, they are. They
all of
are.
That.
They are. But, a lot of the kids that you remembered from the juniors class are now like married and, you know, lawyers and doctors and junk like that. It's like, what's going on?
It's crazy. But I still know, you know, you're always going to be my Sifu and Guru is always going to be my Guru.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll tell Guru that. Awesome.
Yeah, and I do hope I'll pass through class again someday.
Yeah, I hope so, too. If you're ever out here, you know, ring me up on Facebook. Yeah. Awesome.
Tennessee's wild place, I can tell you that. But once again, happy holidays to you, and I miss you.
I miss you, too. Happy holidays. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Antia Geisler, who was a black belt student of myself and Guru Cheryl Johnson. All right, let's move on a bit. I'd like to do some shout-outs, and then I'll pass some shout-outs out to pass the mic off to Sensei Bill and to Deb. I want to start off with birthday shout-outs. We've got several birthdays this week that I know of. We've got on December 2nd, oh, gosh, that's tomorrow, isn't it? So tomorrow, we have three birthdays. Yeah, we have three birthdays. We've got Salem Asli, the famed Savat practitioner. His birthday is tomorrow. Also, Andrew Linick, Hanshi Andrew Linick, who is now the editor and publisher of Official Karate Magazine. Remember that magazine, you guys? Official Karate?
Yes, I do.
And it went out of publication for a little while. It went out of publication like in the mid-1990s, like I want to say 1995 or 96. And it was one of the publications that I followed when I was younger. And it's his birthday tomorrow. Hanshi John Graydon, the karate practitioner and author and motivational speaker, his birthday is tomorrow. We've also got Brad Barlow's birthday on December 3rd, Gary Stevens also on December 3rd, and finally Sifu Douglas Wong on December 7th, who is from White Lotus Kung Fu Studio and is a regular listener and calls in very often to our show. And for everyone that has a birthday this week, even though we have not mentioned your birthday on the air, here's a special tune for you, assuming I can find it where to go. There it is. Happy birthday, everybody, for the week of December 1st through, say that 10 times fast, 1st through the 7th. All right. So, again, reminding our listeners, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Yes, I know it's a New York phone number, even though we're broadcasting out of Seattle. But what can you do? So before I get into the trademark weird news and weird laws of our show, I'd like to hand the mic over to Sensei Bill. If you've got any shout-outs that you'd like to do, any upcoming events, the mic is yours.
Well, I would like to send a shout-out to my partner and just to say what a fantastic job Virginia Smethers does. She is Third Dan in Ishiru Karate and has a great deal of experience in the Filipino stick and blade arts, as well as helping to create the survival response conditioning program that we do, which is up until recently this program was called the Courage Quest. We've changed the name and made some other changes within it. Now we call it the Crucible. And so I want to give a huge shout out to her for all the incredible work that she does. This organization would not exist without her dedication and hard work.
Right on. Yay, Ginny. Round of applause.
Yes, and also my good friend Robert Edwards, who has moved and is in southern Idaho now, about 1,200 miles away, living the small town America life and loving his change. And good for you, my friend. I'm happy for you, and hope that you continue to do well in your life.
Wow. Now, Robert Edwards, as in, like, the janitor?
Yes, indeed.
Wow.
He and I were fellow students under Sensei Armstrong. When I started as a white belt, he was a brown belt. And, and you know, the both of us grew up together under the tutelage of Sensei Armstrong back in at that time, you know. And of course, you know, he's retired now and has moved away. But he's still very much in the thoughts and meditations of those who knew him well and still know him well, since he's still with us.
Wow, very cool. And you know, when I was younger, the janitor Edwards was one of the karateka in the Puget Sound area that I really looked up to. He, you know, and for our listeners out there, you know, we call him the janitor because he really cleaned up. That's how he was in the sparring circuits, in the tournament point fighting circuits and stuff like that. He was quick. And if I remember correctly, one of my
he was known for his takedowns. And this was the day before they outlawed takedowns in karate tournaments. Now, of course, they're not allowed anymore. But back then, his foot sweeps and his takedowns were his number one weapon. And, of course, if you remember, Sifu, you didn't get a point for the takedown. You got a point if you took the person down and then followed through with a punch or a kick. That was the point. But anyway, that was one of the things that led to him being called the janitor.
Yeah, just a wonderful, wonderful gentleman. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to ever meet him in person, although some of my seniors had. So, wow, good luck to you, Hanchi Edwards. Good luck in Idaho, right on.
In Idaho, indeed.
Idaho. What about you, Deb? You got any shout-outs you want to put out before we get into the weird news and stuff?
No. Because anybody from my dojo just doesn't listen, and two of my black belts don't even have computers.
They
don't even have computers.
Call. They can call on their phone and listen to the show. That's.
I know. I've tried.
Come on, Potokagon people. One of your own is being a guest co-host. Come on now. All right.
If there are any Potokagon people out there listening, do call in.
Do
we
call in. Join the fun. It's open mic, 347-677-0699. All right. Well, we're going to get into the weird news, and you guys can comment at any time because, you know, this is normally Sifu Bob's thing. So I think this is going to be, like, only the second time I've done weird news. So let's get on with the
weird news.
All right. So I looked over this news bit, and I'm like, are you serious? Okay. So this story is from Longmont, Colorado. Alleged topless barber is arrested for practicing without a license. Okay. I'm going to try to do this without laughing. Okay.
Wait a second. My question is exactly what was this barber practicing?
I don't, you know, that's what I thought too. Just the headline made me like spew soda out my nose. But okay, here we go. Longmont, Colorado, a woman who allegedly offered topless hairstyling services. Topless. In northern Colorado faces criminal charges. But police say the problem isn't cutting hair without a top. It's cutting hair without a license. Okay. I told myself I wasn't going to snicker through this, but that promise went out the window.
Can't help it.
The Longmont Times reports that 46-year-old... okay, wait a minute. 46 and topless. That...
oh, Lordy. There is a picture I can do without.
Okay.
I need to keep quiet right about now because it would be very, very politically incorrect for me to comment on this.
I mean, okay. I know a lot of middle-aged gals that are, like, still very smoking hot, but just reading that just made me go, are you serious? Okay. Suzette Hall, I don't know how Bob does this without laughing. Suzette Hall was arrested Wednesday night on suspicion of practicing cosmetology without a license. Hall's former partner says she advertised $45 topless haircuts online. Now, according to the arrest warrant, the former partner called police about the topless styling because she, quote unquote, did not believe this was safe or proper. Wait a minute.
Might want to fork scissors away from there.
I know, right? Get those scissors away from me. Yeah. Unfortunately, police weren't able to turn up any Craigslist ads online. Hall's ex-husband told police that she set up shop in Loveland. Wait, is that a town in Colorado?
Well, she picked the right setting, I suppose.
I wonder if this is one of those, X-rated stores. Okay, so she's got this shop in Loveland. I really don't know if it's a town in Colorado or if it's a store.
Make this stuff up, I tell you what.
I don't know. But she offered services as, get this, quote unquote, the rebel barber. Yeah, the rebel barber. Hall's ex-husband also told police that she applied for a nude license for hairstylists, but no license like that exists.
Well, she just decided she'd do it anyway.
I guess so.
Oh, my.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, kudos to you, Suzette, for trying. At least you tried. All right.
I wonder if she had plenty of satisfied customers.
Oh God!
Oh, I can't.
Did you can call that. You could call that the haircut with the happy ending.
Oh God! No, I can't. I mean, it's like, you guys remember out here that whole rigmarole about the topless baristas at the drive-in?
Yes.
Yeah, where was that? Wasn't that out in Tacoma, or was that out here? I forget.
There's some here in Kitsap County.
Oh, the topless.
Yeah, and Lakewood had them for a while. Lakewood, which is the suburb of Tacoma, south of Tacoma there, they were... there were numerous instances of that, or locations where that was available, I suppose you'd say.
Wow. Yeah, and there was a big rigmarole with that, with people going, you don't get away. But, there's always going to be guys driving up just, waiting for them to lean out the window with their coffee. So, Yeah, just like that. That's what they do.
My husband kept threatening to take my son to one of those.
A coffee.
And my son's like, My mom would kill you.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Well, let's get to the weird laws. This is the favorite part. And Sifu Bob ran out of United States to do weird laws on, and he ran out of European states. So we're now in Asia. We're doing weird laws from Asia. So here we go. In China, and we know this, you may only have one child or you will have to pay a fine. We know that. I don't know what the fine is. I might look that up later just out of curiosity. And number two, I'm reading this exactly how it was given to me. In China, according to the law, to go to college, you must be intelligent. Oh, boy. Okay.
I will tell you that I know an awful lot of educated idiots with diplomas from colleges. I'm sorry to have to say that, but, sometimes I like to say bad things, but sometimes bad things are all I have to say, and that's one of them.
Yeah. I mean,
they're both smart, common sense, stupid?
Well,
yeah. Or both.
Yes.
Could be both. You know, there are a lot of college students out there that will admittedly say they cheat. And, you know, especially if you're like in law school or anything like that, don't cheat. How are you going to get a job if you're going to cheat?
Not only are you cheating yourself and cheating the system, but you are cheating your future clients.
Exactly, exactly. And besides, I don't think they're going to pass the bar if they cheat. I mean, if they're going to be stupid and party all the time, you know. Now, I'm sure there are college students out there going, what, there's nothing wrong with partying. But, you know, I was young too, but, you know, just be smart about it. Don't cheat. All right. In the Philippines. Now we're in the Philippines. Now, I've known about this law, but I didn't see it in force. Cars whose license plates end with a 1 or a 2 are not allowed on the roads on Monday. If your license plate ends with 3 or 4, you're not allowed on the roads on Tuesdays. License plates with ending in 5 or 6, you're not allowed out on Wednesdays. 7 or 8, you're not allowed out on Thursdays. And 9 or 0, you're not allowed on Friday from 7 a.m. Now, I don't know if it's 7 to 7. I don't know how that works, but I think it's just to curb down the traffic. So I don't remember seeing that in force because I saw all modes of numbers of license plates endings with the numbers 1 through 0. Pretty funny. Now, can you imagine if that happened here?
Oh,
you know,
boy,
let's just say that in Washington, it would suck, and that would mean that I would not be able to teach my busiest classes.
Well, you'd have to take the bus is what you'd have to do.
I hope that they make light rail a little more accessible if that's the case.
Well, you know, you better not talk too loudly about that because some. You know, we said we weren't going to talk about religion or politics, but I'm going to say that some idiot politician is going to try to make a law, you know, to improve air quality and all the other happy hooey that happens here, you know.
Uh-huh.
Let's hope that never happens.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And that would be interesting, to say the least. And now, last but not least, we've got South Korea. South Korea, gotta be detailed here. Traffic police are required to report all bribes that they receive from motorists.
Well, they can be taxed on them.
They have to report that as income, huh?
They do. Oh my gosh! But what would they bribe them for? Like getting across the border to North Korea? I mean, that's kind of weird. So, wow. Well, that was it for our
Weird News.
All right. Well, let's do this real quick because I need to take a little break, get a quick drink of water because I'm still coming down from this, like, weird cold that resulted in, like, really wild laryngitis. And it's beginning to sound like I'm going to get it again if I'm not careful. So I'm going to go get some water. So we'll be right back after this, folks. We'll be right back in about 3 minutes.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn today...
The only thing I didn't learn... is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov, a message from the Ad Council.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better, and kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right. Welcome back, listeners. If you're just now tuning in, this is Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio. I'm Rashida De Jesus. I'm your host for tonight. Tiku Robert Deal can't join us, but I am joined by Sensei Bill Kortenbach and Deborah Evans, and they're on the board with me for Open Mic Night. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Feel free to join in the fun. We can talk about anything. This is Rant, Rave, and Rap. You can rant about anything, rave about anything, and just give us something random to talk about. Except for religion and politics.
Now, well, Cecil, I've got a safety tip for our listeners.
What's that?
Okay, my safety tip for our listeners is, and you can use this as a really cool stocking stuffer as a gift for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and get what we call a carbide tipped automatic center punch. Now, this this is a little thing that looks mm-hmm. like a steel pen, and mm-hmm. it's automatic in that if you press it up against the window, let's suppose mm-hmm. that your car has gone off the road and gone into the water and submerged, and you've got to get out quick. Let's suppose that your range of motion is restricted, and so you can't hammer away at your window. You can take this little device, press it up against your window, and when you depress it against the window, a powerful spring, internal spring, releases, and that mm-hmm. carbide tip hits the window and shatters the glass, and you can get out. Now, this is important because for every foot that the car goes deeper into the water, there mm-hmm. there is an additional 850 pounds of pressure per square foot against that door and against that window. So even if you unlock your door, there is no way that you can force enough pressure against it to open it up. The only other way is to wait until the car settles to the bottom or until the car is completely filled with water. Then the pressure mm-hmm. will equalize and you can open the door. But who wants to do that? Because that means you've got to hold your breath, and that
right.
gets really dicey. So, you know, the additional tip that I have is you go to a stationery store like Staples and buy one of those little pencil holders that hold a large-bodied pencil. And then you can mount this right on the side of your door where it's, you know, just within fingertips reach away. It also doubles as a very good close-quarter impact weapon if you should ever need one, and when you're stopped at a light and somebody tries to jack your car.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Very cool. And they can get that at any Home Depot, pretty much?
Well, yeah, the best place to go is you can order them online. That's the easiest way to do it because the ones that they have at Home Depot, generally speaking, are not carbide-tipped. And mm-hmm. you really want the carbide-tipped version of this because that tip is so hard, it'll never get dull, ever. And
very cool.
And it provides the best impact, of all of them there. And you know, it's between $20 and $25 usually, but it's a great little stocking stuffer, and it'll save a life perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. You got that, listeners? Carbide-tipped center punch.
Yes.
I read about that.
Automatic center punch.
Mm-hmm. I forgot where I read about that. I forgot what I was looking for, and I saw something about that online, and I thought that is awesome.
Well, I saw that on Facebook as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I saw yours, and then I was going somewhere else, and then I saw it online, and I'm like, whoa, really? What's going on? So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So carbide-tipped automatic center punch. Go grab one. I mean, it's just going to fit in a little pocket next to your, you know, in your car door, you know, easy to get to, and that's great. Because you never know. I mean, you know, a lot of people might think, well, my car's never going to end.
You know, here we live in the Puget Sound Basin area, and wherever we go, sooner or later, we're in proximity to bodies of water, whether they're rivers or the sound or a bay or a lake, and roads getting icy and winter coming on, you know, these kinds of accidents can happen. About 400 people a year lose their lives because they go off a road and are submerged in the water. So, you know, don't be a statistic. Yourself with this little tool, and you could save your life and save the life of your passengers, or give this as a gift to be responsible for saving the life of a loved one as well.
Mm-hmm. Very awesome tip. Very awesome tip. And I actually posted your tip on the latest Live on the Air post on Facebook. In fact, you're tagged on it. So are you, Deb. You're tagged on that post. But to get another subject out there for our open mic, and our callers are welcome to call in. This is martial arts related, and I'm just going to throw this subject out there. And this subject is about black belt tests for kids, little kids. My question to the general public is, what do you think? Should, you know, little kids be allowed to test for black belt? Yes, no, or maybe so. So, well, let's go ahead and start with Deb on this one. So, Deb, what are your thoughts on this? Now, I'm going to go ahead and start, you know, just with a little comment. When I got my black belt in Botokukan, I was 15 years old. Now, some other styles will say, well, you know, you can't get a black belt in our system until you're 18. I was 15 years old, but I was tested like any other adult. I sparred like any other, you know, grown up would have been able, you know, to spar. They didn't, like, match me up with people my size. In fact, like, 99% of the population is bigger than me anyway. So I was sparring against people, you know, bigger than me, defending myself against people that were bigger than me. I was expected to do the katas, not make a mistake, do them well, and to not basically choke throughout that whole long test. And, you know, that was the first time of, you know, someone under the age of 18 got their black belt. And, you know, I was pretty proud of myself and stuff like that. But then other systems will say, no matter what, you're not getting your black belt until 18. However, I've seen black belts that are 9 years old that don't have skill. So that's kind of why I'm throwing this out here going, okay, so what's the difference here? You know, what do people think? So, Deb, let's start with you. Black belts for kids.
Well, I would say it would depend on their maturity level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some kids can handle that kind of thing at younger ages.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to be mentally mature enough to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you might mean as far as mentally mature?
First of all, they have to be able, in our system, you'd have to be able to handle the 3-hour test. Because
mm-hmm.
that's meant to break you down mentally, physically, and everything like
mm-hmm.
that. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have to show the control and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But by mentally, I mean, you know, maturity-wise. You know, some
mm-hmm.
kids age, they mature at different rates.
Right,
And, you know, if you're not real mature in, because you don't want them going around bragging about it, really.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
And if your maturity level isn't at a point where you could handle, like, what happened to you when you were teaching. It's mm-hmm. because of your young age, people were like, oh, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to handle that rejection and not take it personally, I guess is
right.
what I'm saying.
Right, right. And, you know, when I did start teaching, I did only get a few people, adults, that refused to, you know, drop for push-ups if I said push-ups or something like that, right? I didn't take it personally. I just figured, okay, well, that's how they are. I am, you know, 15, 16. I'm not a grown-up. But why can't they respect my rank? And I was prepared for it. Sensei Gurney and Sensei Robert Long prepared me for it. And they said, you know what? You know, this belt isn't just, hey, I'm this expert black belt or whatever. You know, are you going to be able to handle this? I mean, there's a level of responsibility that you have to realize before, number one, you take this test, and number two, before you're given a class of your own, are you ready for that? And, you know, to tell you the truth, I was, but I didn't know what I was getting myself into as far as teaching. And, you know, and I must say it was a great learning experience, but, you know, and then a few years after that, Sensei Daryl D'Ambrosio became the youngest person to get their black belt at the age of 14. And he was more than prepared, as much as any other adult. But, you know, nowadays, though, you see people that are like, here in America, I'm not talking about like Japan or anything like that, because that's a different story. But here in America, you see kids that are like, you know, even 7 years old, 8 years old, 9 years old, sporting a black belt without, you know, skill that matches it. But, you know, is that merely because it's like a junior black belt type of thing? So, you know, does it depend on the studio? So that's kind of my question to everyone out there. What are your thoughts on that? I'm not putting down any school that decides to have junior black belts or anything. Definitely not. It's just that, you know, I agree that a level of a certain type of maturity is involved, not necessarily adult mentality, because you can't ask an 8-year-old to think like an adult, but a certain type of understanding of what the rank represents and what responsibilities that they carry with that rank. And sometimes kids don't have that, and they're given, you know, black belts indiscriminately. And, you know, that's kind of how I've seen things. Of course, you know, I've seen plenty of black belts under the age of 18 that are so sharp, so mature, and so responsible for everything they do. They've got the control. Their knowledge is there. They can speak. And, you know, they can walk the walk and talk the talk, you know, and then there are others that just get a black belt and think that they're, you know, hot beans and that their poop don't stink, you know. So yeah,
well,
I agree about
this,
the level of maturity. Yes, Bill, you're next. I wanted you to answer this.
Okay, well, I'm going to come at this from a little bit different angle. Sensei Armstrong was one of those instructors who absolutely refused to promote anybody, no matter what their skill level was, until they were at least 18 years of age. It was one of the requirements that
mm-hmm,
you be at
mm-hmm.
least 18 years of age and so on, and he never broke that rule.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, I recognize that there are exceptions to every rule.
Yes.
There are some
yes.
students that, as you mentioned, are so exceptional, and their maturity level is years beyond where their physical age actually is,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you look at that and you go, well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
However, I spoke to Sensei Armstrong about this once, and he gave me a very interesting perspective on this. He said, you know, he said, the thing is that in this country, when somebody is promoted to black belt, that is perceived as an expert status.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And And people transfer that expert status. And I know, Sifu, that you've seen this yourself over and over again, where, you know, you are looked at as an expert in the martial arts, and people expect that you are expert in other areas as well. And this is not a good thing for a young person who's barely 18 years of age, even if they are promoted, you know, because the advice that you are giving the people that you are that are under you must be tempered by your life experience.
Exactly.
As well. You know, and so that's part of it. The second thing is, for most children, especially these young ones, there is no way that an 8 or 9 year old child has an equivalent skill set for, you know, with an adult who was going through the same type of training. It's just not possible. Mm-hmm. It's not physically possible for that to happen. And what that does is that degrades the rank as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It brings the level, because, you know, there's that old saying that in an emergency, you don't rise to the occasion. You fall to the level of your training.
Exactly.
Okay? So that's the second point. Third, when you were promoted at the age of 15, okay, this was a different era than we see now. I remember how it was for me. You know, I was promoted after I was 18 years of age, and even then, this was at a time in the martial arts when we didn't use padded floors. The floor was hardwood floor, okay?
Yep.
There was no protective equipment, okay? Every time you walked out onto the floor at Sensei Armstrong's dojo, you got hurt.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got hurt badly. And what that did, as brutal as it was, it weeded out everybody who didn't absolutely love what they were doing and who weren't utterly committed to it. So you had a different tank that you were selecting from. You see, and now we've basically dumbed it down with all of the protective padding, the soft training, the situational ethics, and so on and so forth. And you know, Armstrong Sensei was a Marine, and you know, he learned, you know, his martial arts training was tempered by his experience on the battlefield. And when you trained with him, you got the battlefield experience, because this is what he knew and this is what he taught. So. I know this is a little bit roundabout way of answering this question, but for me, now at the school that I teach, I have held on to this idea that Sensei Armstrong trained, because one of my legacies is to hand off this art to my students exactly as it was handed off to me by Sensei Armstrong. This is the thing that I most want to do, and so I've continued that. However, I have seen in my time in the martial arts, students who were less than 18 years of old, who had the maturity and who had the physical skill set, absolutely. And my last comment was, it never hurt those students to wait a little longer.
Yes, yes, yes. You know,
so
I'll have to agree with you there.
That's my perspective on this.
Yes, I'll have to agree with you there, Sensei, because, you know, if you're eight, you know, then, and if your school, you know, if any school, not your school, but, you know, if a school says you can't
generically.
Be, yeah, generically, if a school says, no, you cannot get your black belt until you're 18, then just, you know, just wait and then imagine what kind of black belt test you're going to have. It's going to be, you know, another 10 years of experience. Now, the thing is, though, is that, you know, I look at
primarily
my own systems. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, well, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead and finish your thought, please.
Okay. You know, I can only, speak about the systems I'm trained in. I can't see anyone starting at the age of, let's say, 5 and being able to get the requirements for black belt by the time they're 8. I don't see it, you know.
Right.
You know, I'm just speaking from, you know, the systems that I'm trained in. I don't see it being possible. You know, have there been kids that have come close? Yes. I had this one child. His name was Marcus. I remember this like it was yesterday. His name was Marcus, and he was gifted. I mean, like, gifted beyond gifted. I thought, where did this kid come from? And you could show him a kata once, and he will do it, you know, sharp, that kind of thing. You show it to him once. And I'm like, where did, whoa, what's going on? And, you know, I had, yeah, he was a prodigy. And there came this point where, like, you know, white belt, yellow belt, you know, orange belt, blue belt, purple belt, I was like, I can't, you know, I'm going to promote him because I can't hold him back. He's got adult requirements. He's not using, like, the kids, you know, the kids, you know, tip system. He's using adult requirements, and he's doing it, and he's defending himself. Then he got to a brown belt, and I thought, what am I going to do? Okay, by this point in time, Marcus was, like, eight or nine, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? You know, should I tell him that he's going to have to wait until it may be 16? Maybe 15, because, you know.
There's a case where I would see, that's one instance where I would see the, some value in a junior black belt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, given that particular set of circumstances, myself. You know, mm-hmm. because, you know, remember, the rules are guides, okay? And they,
they're there to
guard against a certain thing and prevent substandard skill sets from mm-hmm. attaining, you know, the credentials that well-meaning but non-informed people would mistake as being expert status. That's mm-hmm. the idea behind it. But in a situation like that, a junior black belt, I think, would be appropriate. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I could see that.
Right. Yeah, I actually think about it, and I spoke to my instructors about it, and they watched him, and they're like, oh, holy crap. You know what I mean? They're like, yeah, you know. But unfortunately, you know, a holiday vacation came, and during that time he decided to take up boxing and, you know, quit classes. And I'm like, oh, you know, where you're like, I was kind of disappointed, but, you know, then again, you know, kids should be able to do. Yeah, I can't keep them. I was disappointed, but, yeah, but I said, okay, you know, kids should be able to do what they want to do. And, you know, I hope to goodness that he got golden gloves in something because he was sharp. He is sharp, and he's going to be, gosh, he would be maybe about getting close to going to college right about now. So I hope he's doing well. Marcus, if you remember me, if you're listening, if you happen to be listening, I remember you, buddy.
Well,
so,
you know, I've got a student right now that I have had for the last 8 years, okay? She started mm-hmm. when she was 6 years old, okay? Mm-hmm. She is now, after 8 years of training, a green belt in Ishin Karate.
Mm-hmm.
And she understands perfectly that this is a long-term thing. And her parents understand it. And she is perfectly willing to take long periods of time. And I'm telling you, there are very, very few 14-year-old girls, and she's mm-hmm. a twiggy little thing, that could break a 6-foot-tall man's jaw with a single roundhouse kick. Okay? She's
mm-hmm.
one of them. And all I can tell you is that in this particular case, making her wait is not going to harm her one little bit. She is going to be a phenomenal world-class
yes.
martial artist at the level of Shodan. She is going to
mm-hmm.
be at Shodan where most normal martial artists are at Yandan.
Yeah, yeah. And
that's where she's going to be. And so,
that's,
you know, this,
that's cool.
It's all relative. I mean, this doesn't hurt. What it really has to do with is marketing, money, and how impatient the parents and the students are for status.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
And in fact, I was going to touch into that, Sensei and Deb. It's kind of a segue into the next subject, which was that I wanted to throw out there, the McDojo label. But, you know, And I'm sure all dojos out there have met at least one child or a parent that has been impatient for getting their kid rank or status, as you put it. I've had a couple of those instances, and I know a lot of people out there have, you know. And it's just, you know, it's just unfortunate that you know, whatever marketing or stereotypes go out there that make the parents, not necessarily the kids. I mean, the kids can get it from like TV and stuff like that, but whatever stereotypes that the parents get that makes, you know, that allows them to make the assumption that every time there's a test, their kid is going to test. And
that's because, Sifu, they are living vicariously through their children. And this is a terrible mm-hmm. burden to place on the child. Let the children live and let them enjoy. And, you know, as a parent, you know, you're going to have all kinds of time with them if you arrange your life in the way that you should as a parent, okay? Let them have their own experience when they do this this wonderful discipline, you know, and so on. That's, you know, when I was the head instructor at Gig Harbor Karate Academy, for years I was the head instructor there, and that area is very well-to-do. The average median income is $78,500, and it's very high. And these people are used to getting what they want. They come into your dojo, and it's like they're ordering off a menu. And, I got to the point where I would sit them down, you know, and I would say, okay, what is it that you want to achieve for your son or for your daughter? And let them tell me what it was. And the thing that I got the most is, well, I want little Johnny to have discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to them, I need to ask you a question, and I need you to not become upset when I ask you this question, because it's actually an incredibly important thing that we need to talk about. And they're all ears, mm-hmm. you know. And
right.
I say to them that the question that I need to ask you is, do you have more discipline than your child?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
what is going to happen is your child at this moment is all excited about doing karate. And their reason for being involved in karate is very different from your reason for having them involved in karate. The two
mm-hmm.
are completely different. And the day is coming about a week and a half to 2 weeks down the road from this point, if they sign up today, that they're going to come to you whining and crying that karate isn't fun anymore and I don't want to do karate.
Mm-hmm.
Then you are going to have to put up with that whining and be the strong leader in your family and tell them you are going to go because you made a commitment and you can
mm-hmm.
quit when the period of commitment that you made for is up. Because you're
mm-hmm.
teaching them something very, very important, almost
exactly.
without exception. This is the sad part, almost without exception. Even giving them that little speech and making it very, very clear to them, those parents are the ones that caved in, and within a month or 2 months and sometimes three, they were gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would rather teach martial arts in a economically deprived, poor ghetto than to teach martial arts in a wealthy suburb, because those poor parents know what they're getting, they see the worth, and they are going to make their children do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. I like the way that you put that. I like the way that you ask the parents in that way, that you're going to need more discipline than your child. I love it. I love it.
That's what
pretty
has
much
to happen,
all,
though,
yeah.
I mean, in reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because
yeah.
it's you know, the thing is, the parent wants to be the friend of the child, and you can't
exactly.
be a parent and a friend. You have
exactly.
to be the parent, and the parent is the one that lays down the rules and says, you know what, you might not like it. You know, the father says, eat your beans, boy, they'll put hair on your chest. Well, I don't like the beans, eat them anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there has to be structure and discipline, and anybody who says it isn't so, okay, is mm-hmm. raising a little serial killer in training.
You know, I'll have to agree with you 100% there, because, well, not necessarily that they're all going to turn out to be serial killers, but,
well, that's,
you know,
but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. I know exactly what you're saying. I agree with you completely because, you know, usually when parents sign up their children, in fact, you know, just the other day, I was like, okay, you know, Johnny wants to join. I almost gave his real name. If Johnny wants to join this class, okay, I want you to understand that, you know, we have to work as a team. You wrote on your application, you want him to learn self-confidence and you want him to learn self-discipline. Well, if he goes, I'm too tired after class, It's funny that you brought that up because I had the exact same conversation with a parent the other day. If he whines, I'm too tired after school or something to go to class, can I just stay home? I'm going to need you to get his butt in the car and drive him here, and because it's going to teach him so much stuff he's going to need later on. And I want to quit. You know, you're going to have to say no. You know, give whatever reason you're going to give. But no, you're going to go because you're the one that wanted to do this. And just because Sifu made you do a few more push-ups than you could do, it's not going to kill you. You can do a few more today. And I ask for that rapport with the parent because it's true. You know, there are parents that will cave in and go, oh, honey, you don't like it? Okay, well, we'll find you piano lessons now. And that
right,
kid's just going to keep going, oh, yeah.
They're looking, the parent is looking often, you know, some parents want discipline for their kids, and that's the reason they come to train, to have their child train in martial arts, okay? And some of them, though, they see this as entertainment to keep Johnny or Susie pacified, and because they view it as entertainment, it's not very important to them either. And
exactly.
The minute that the fun is gone out of it, the student is going to go as well. So, you know, there is a part that we need to play as instructors to keep our classes as interactive and
mm-hmm.
as busy and as fun as the skill set, as the acquisition of the skill set allows them to be. But beyond that, it's work.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And I have a rule at my school, okay? And I remind my young students all the time, and so do my other instructors, okay? And I tell them this. I say, listen, you have 23 hours of every day to do exactly as you please, you know,
mm-hmm.
provided that your parents agree, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The moment that you take off your shoes and step on this mat, you are mine. Your time doesn't belong to you. It's mine.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I have a duty to give you 100% of my attention and so that you can eventually gain my skill set and my experience. And if you don't like that, then you may leave. Because
mm-hmm.
I am not going to have a student on my mat who is not seriously engaged in the learning process. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you're too old school. Well, that may be. But there are plenty of martial arts schools that cater. They're basically enhanced babysitting classes.
Exactly.
And they have many
exactly.
choices. They can go to those schools. I will not sell out. I am going to continue to train in the manly art of Vishnu Karate, and I'm going to pass this on to my students. And, you know, the ones that receive it are going to be benefited for the rest of their life. And those who don't, well, they are no longer my problem.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Because, you know, there's a saying that I'm going to attribute to Soke Greg Wooldridge of Kang Chuan Do. He tells his instructors and his students all the time, as instructors, we have to teach the students what they need, not what they want. Because if we
yeah.
teach them what they want, they're going to grow up to be egotistical. They're going to grow up thinking that their shit don't stink, pardon the French. And they're going to grow up without a sense of value to the work that they put in to a goal. And without those three things, they're not going to get very far, you know, once they get out into the world. And, you know, teach them what they need, not what they want. And unfortunately, you know, there are parents out there that will give their parents anything their kids want. $300 shoes. You want to do karate lessons? Okay. Nope. You don't like it 3 days later? Okay. We're gone. We'll do parkour lessons now. You know?
Absolutely. And Sifu, the Armstrong Sensei taught me the three great truths, the three great principles and lessons of the martial arts. Would you like to hear what they are?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Honor that you may bring it to your name. Combat that none may take your honor from you, and humility that you may clearly see the path of honor. These are the
mm-hmm.
three great teachings of the martial arts. And
mm-hmm.
those are things that children are not being taught today. They're not being taught by society. They're not being taught by our culture. They're not being taught this in the school system. And sadly, often they are not being taught this by their parents either. And what mm-hmm. will happen to us and to our society when tomorrow's youth who have no courage and have no backbone are put into leadership positions? What
mm-hmm.
then?
Yeah, exactly. Or those kids learn, you know, whatever they learn from, you know, their peers, which may or may not be bad peers, you know. And too many, I feel that there are too many kids out there that, you know, like you said, they don't get a sense of self-discipline at home, or they don't have a mentor to guide them. And then they get it somewhere else. And, you know, whether or not these kids just end up not doing well in school, or if, God forbid, they go out and join a gang and pop someone in the head, you know, it's, you know, it. What's that saying? It takes a village. And, it, you know, the whole village mentality of raising today's youth is, it's, I, you know, it's still present in, you know, certain places, but we see it less and less.
Well, here's the comment that I would make about this, and I'm not contradicting you in any way. I'm simply
uh-huh.
inviting you to consider this.
Mm-hmm.
Today, in today's world, we hardly know our neighbors. We live in apartment complexes, and we don't even know the names of the people who live right next to us. We go
mm-hmm.
to work, okay, in our little mobile cubicle to the little cubicle that we sit in at work. We interact with people at a distance online and over the telephone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Where is this close-knit community of yesterday? I don't
exactly.
think it exists, not in the same way that it used to.
Exactly.
And this is a problem. So now when we say it takes a village to raise a child, okay, I think that saying applies very beautifully to days gone by. But
mm-hmm.
today, often, it's a way of the parents spreading the responsibility for raising their child so that they can do the things that they want to do, you know, because
mm-hmm.
at a minimum,
mm-hmm.
what is required in our society to raise a child to become a powerful, self-aware adult is a minimum of one utterly committed parent, just
mm-hmm.
like it is in the natural world, where the mother bear is utterly committed to that cub. And ask another animal that tries to harm that cub about the commitment of the mother bear.
Mm-hmm.
That mother bear is utterly committed. And as parents, we need to be utterly committed, because our primary job is to train our child or our children to become powerful, self-aware, compassionate, sentient human beings. This is our duty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to have, you know, the finer car, the larger house, the larger bottom line at the end of the year fiscally. Okay,
mm-hmm.
these are not important goals. Okay, the future depends on individual parents doing their duty by their children, and it is not happening in the way that it's one of the reasons why we see so many problems in our society. It's one of the reasons why we see this knockout game going on
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I was just going to mention that. Yeah, and I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. That's true. What are your thoughts on this, Deb?
He said it so beautifully.
I know, didn't
I mean,
he? Isn't that great? You know, it's, yeah, amen.
And, you know,
amen.
I, you know, as a parent, I have two kids. I actually have five, three of which are special needs. And
then you are a blessed woman.
Huh?
You are a blessed woman. Then you are a blessed woman because.
Oh, yeah.
You,
I'm very blessed.
So you know why. I don't need to tell you why. You know why.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And my son is now 18 years old. And I told him, you know, you got to be wise in how you choose your friends, because there is such a thing as guilt by association. Asian.
Mm-hmm.
They do something wrong, you're associated with them, guess what? And he's dropped more than one friend because they kept getting arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Our jails are full today because parents refuse to parent.
Mm-hmm.
My kids you know, I made them toe the line when they were little, and I get compliments on my kids. They're polite. They know the value of hard work, honest day's work for an honest day's pay. And that when my son was like 10 years old, he'd take a broken lawnmower. One of the wheels was busted off and go mow lawns to raise money. And he bought me a birthday present with that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How cool.
And
wow.
He's moderately mentally retarded. But I raised him as if he treated him as if he was like any other child his age. And he's well-adjusted adult today.
Very
so.
Cool. Very, very cool.
You know,
very
it's,
cool.
It's incumbent on us as instructors in the martial arts that we take this extremely seriously, because the lack of parenting skills, you know, on the part of many, many parents, not all, obviously, because I don't want my parents to come down and string me up after hearing this broadcast, but many, many parents are not doing right by their children. And when you cross paths as an instructor with a young person where you can see that there is, let's just say, an attention deficit on the part of the parent,
mm-hmm.
you may be the only powerful, positive influence in that child's life. That may be you. And whether or not that child has a wonderful future where they become the adult that they were destined to be or not, okay, could depend on how carefully you mentor that child during the time you have with them. So don't waste a minute. You know, be the kind of instructor that they look up to and that they trust, because they may not be getting this from mom and dad. They might be getting opposite messages. You just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really important thing, you know, and we talk about, you know, the beauty of teaching a martial arts system, but, you know, I'll segue into something else very quickly, because it makes a good point here.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, I started on my 15th birthday, August 5, 1975. I remember it like it was yesterday. Walking in, I got beat up on the bus riding down to my first karate lesson, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in there, and Sensei Armstrong was at a tournament in Texas. And his number one guy at the time was a guy by the name of Ed Lewis. And Ed Lewis looked at me. He took one look at me. He saw that big shiner I had, you know, and the blood coming out of my nose, and he looked at me and he said, "I know what you need." And that was the beginning for me of a long, long path that has lasted to this very day. I'm talking to you about it right now because of it. And, you know, the thing is, this changed my life. I became someone to be reckoned with, because I had excellent coaching. This happened at the very same time that my dad left our family, and my parents got divorced, and so my dad was not around to teach me how to be a man, to teach me what was required of me, you know. But Sensei Armstrong in and filled those shoes beautifully, and he did it unobtrusively. It was a masterful performance on his part. I didn't recognize it then, but boy, do I see it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Wow.
And so when we look at what we do as instructors, especially when we're teaching children, we should hold that in our hearts and in our minds, because you may be the only positive influence in that child's life.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yes, indeed. Very cool. Very cool. Well, I just happened to look back at the studio board here on our time, and we've only got maybe about 5 or 10 minutes left in our live broadcast. So I kind of want to just wrap it up and just talk about just one last thing, and then we'll have to wrap up. I just got this story in my inbox because I'm always on the lookout for like weird news. And I really don't know if this is considered weird. It's more tragic, but it just goes along the line of the whole Black Friday thing and the sense of urgency that people put on getting those deals at the stores on Black Friday. So I just got this story. This is about an incident that happened in Chicago at a Walmart yesterday. And it says that a woman was arrested today for stabbing to death three shoppers at a Chicago area Walmart in order to secure the store's last Xbox One. Mary Robbins, a married woman of two, of a mother, reportedly wrestled her competitors to the ground before fatally wounding them with a sharpened Phillips head screwdriver. Okay, now who brings a sharpened screwdriver to Walmart? This is crazy.
Let me jump in here for a second because I saw that post earlier today, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I checked out the source on that post. The source, now I can't tell you whether this is a true story or not, but the source often posts scurrilous stories that have no truth in them. So this may be an urban legend in the making right here.
You know, because all I got was the text. I don't know if it came from, like, the Onion, you know, because I would expect something like that in the Onion. You know what I mean?
It actually may have been from the Onion, okay? In
fact, I'm going to have to look it up.
Familiar.
It may not be an accurate
story. See, you know, I read something like that, and it's close enough and just outlandish enough that you could kind of see it happening, and that's a sick commentary on the world that we live in, you know, but it's right out on the edge there. You know, and so I saw that, and I looked at it, and I looked at some of the posts. And there were people on there that were debunking this story and saying, wait a minute, check your sources on this, you know. This came from the same source that posted another story that 5,000 people had been murdered this Black Friday.
Yeah,
okay?
I heard like 5,000 or 5 million.
That story came from the same source.
Let me see here. Okay, I just typed it up, and now I'm on Snopes. And Snopes says, by the end of the day, links and excerpts referencing this article were being circulated via social media, with many of those who encountered it mistaking it for a genuine news item. It is fake. However, the article was a bit of humor in the Daily Current, which spoofed the consumer madness of Black Friday. It is fake. So good. You know, that's why I wanted to, like, pull it out there and go, what is this? This doesn't make sense. A sharpened screwdriver? What are you talking about? So I had to wonder, is this like the, you know, 5 million dead during Black Friday? Because I saw the 5,000 or 5 million dead one, and it was on the Onion, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. But it is like that. It's like, you know, people are just – I've never heard of anybody killing people, but, you know – but it's just crazy. You know, why can't they just wait a couple weeks?
because they are in the grip of a compulsion, okay? These are people, they're like lemmings, okay? And they will follow each other over the cliff, you know, because people want to win. And they want to they want to feel that their lives have meaning. And if they can get the best deal, you know, they feel good about themselves, you know, and this thing, it's a sickness that happens, and it's consumerism at its worst, and it's materialism at its absolute degraded worst. I wish it were otherwise, but unfortunately, that's the world that we live in, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. What are your thoughts on Black Friday, Deb?
I think it's a bunch of people, reasonable people that absolutely turn into animals.
I refuse to
go to a store on Black Friday unless I have to.
I don't shop on Black Friday. And another thing I won't do is I will not shop on Thanksgiving Day, because if I go in there, okay, and I shop, I am in a sense forcing people to be away from their families on Friday,
yeah,
and I
yeah.
just don't want to do that. You know, I think that this should be a family day. There's not, for God's sake, one day of the year we ought to be able to spend with family.
Exactly. I was going to say that too. Like, you know, the local Safeway down the road for me was open. We were coming back from my aunt's place, and it was open. They were open regular hours, and I was like, are you serious? And there were people going in and out of there. The parking lot was full, and I'm like, really? Number one, what are they all doing out? I mean, they're probably all, you know, getting something on the way home after spending time with family. But, you know, but I think about all of those employees, and I have a student or a couple students that work for retail stores. They had to work when they could be with their family. And I was like, that's just unfortunate. You know, why can't we just say, you know, put it on the door. We're going to be closed Thanksgiving Day. Get all your stuff now. Let's get the madness and the rush out of getting the turkey and the stuffing and the cranberry sauce and stuff like that. Get it out of the way earlier in the week. And then let's just have everyone stay home and just relax and spend time. But, you know, consumerism, I guess. I don't know.
Sifu, that's what happens when you have a publicly held company and the management, the upper echelon of the hierarchy of management is responsible only to the shareholders who care only about the bottom line. It's naked greed.
Yeah, and it's funny, though, because, you know, I hear that, you know, from some people that work for retail stores, it's that, you know, when holiday comes, well, guess who gets the day off? The manager, right?
Yep.
You know, the manager, the CEOs, the executives, they get the day off. Meanwhile, you know, the assistant managers or the crew chiefs or whatever, they're busting their balls working on Thanksgiving. Granted, they might get, you know, holiday pay or whatever, but, you know, it's, yeah. Thanksgiving
yeah.
and Christmas, come on, folks. Give them a day off.
My nephew's girlfriend was just absolutely devastated because she works for Walmart. And she was so looking forward to spending Thanksgiving with us, and she had to work.
Oh, man.
Yep. Yeah,
she
yeah,
cried.
It's just going to get crazy the closer Christmas comes, too.
Yeah, one of our students, the mother, couldn't find daycare because she had to work on Thanksgiving. And so not only did she miss out, but her child had to be with strangers on Thanksgiving, and that they don't care about that, unfortunately, you know, and that's just the way it is. But, you know, I'll tell you what, there, you know, you can't change the world, but you can change you, and you can change how you are going to interact, and you can decide that you are not going to be part of this problem, that you're going to be part of the solution. That's what you can do.
Exactly, and what better words to end our open mic show? I love it. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. I was thinking, you know, how am I going to fill up 2 hours? I could talk by myself, you know, but it's so much funner to talk with other people, especially with you guys. Dev, you know, you've been a loyal listener ever since from day one. Thank you for joining me. And Sensei Bill, thank you for joining us again. And, you know, we'd like to have you as a guest at another time.
Well, we'll
just
talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that because we'd really like for you to talk more about Safety First and to get really deep into your background and your philosophies and stuff like that without an open mic.
I'll send you my contact information and get yours on Facebook, okay?
Okay, sounds great.
Very good.
Awesome.
Have a good one.
All right. Well, have a great one, Sensei Bill and Dev. And this was Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Open Mic. And next week we'll be back. Sifu Robert Deal will be back with us. And we'll have a whole new show ready for you next week. So we'll see everyone next week. Talk to everyone later. Bye-bye now.